and I'm pleased to be here with our Chief Judge, Frankie Moore, on my right, and our immediate past Chief Judge, Rhett Inbody, on my left. We welcome you to the afternoon session of the Court of Appeals. I would remind you that we are live streaming on NET, so any confidential or sensitive information, you know, keep that in mind. It will be recorded audio as well as by video. So, and when I call you up and I call your case name, I will have to say it a second time for recording purposes before you start. All right. Our first case for the afternoon is Stewart versus Piricello. Again, our first case is Stewart versus Piricello. I see in the sign-in sheet that perhaps appellant's counsel has not made an appearance. So if appellee's counsel would like to come up and make an argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Mark Dicute. I'm the attorney for the appellee, Michael Piricello. I frankly was hoping to hear some scintillating argument this morning, but I guess I'm not going to get that from counsel for you. I'd like to talk a little bit in this case, and I don't want to spend a lot of time belaboring the points because they were pretty straightforward. I'm reminded of the old Highlights book when I was a child, a little magazine that used to be published on a fairly regular basis, and there was always a section of it called What's Wrong with This Picture? And that's kind of the approach that was taken in front of the trial court in this case. The trial court was very good at sniffing out what was wrong with this picture. It dedicated itself primarily to two central points. The first point was, number one, the appellants sued the wrong party. They sued my client, the appellee, individually. The evidence showed that he acted at all times material in this case as the trustee of a revocable trust.
Counsel, if that argument is correct, did the court then even have jurisdiction to proceed with the case?
Yes, Your Honor. The court did have jurisdiction to proceed with the case because the court could go ahead and enter a final order as to the appellee. He was a party at all times material to this. In addition, the second point that was addressed by the court.
But if a necessary party has not been included in the proceeding, doesn't our law say that the district court would have no jurisdiction to determine the controversy if a necessary party? And aren't you saying that the trustee was the necessary party?
And that was my argument exactly, Your Honor. The argument that was made by the appellants, however, was different. They argued that Michael Piricello, the appellee in this case, was a proper party defendant.
Because he signed the disclosure statement and purchase agreement individually.
Well, there was a little bit of question about that. I think the trial court resolved that in favor of the fact that he signed them as trustee. There is no designation after he signed those. I would agree with that. But he testified that that's how he acted in connection with this property, was as the trustee of the trust. And we did alert them, incidentally, to the fact that they sued the wrong party in our answer in this case. And still, no action was taken to try and amend. It was just the case dragged on and dragged on without any attempt to bring in the proper party.
And that raises another question that I have, counsel. The first cause of action based upon the statutory claim, the disclosure
Correct.
Statement claim, your argument, which was successful in the district court, was there's no way he could amend now because the one-year statute of limitations has passed. And the court arguably properly dismissed that with prejudice. What about the breach of contract claim? The statute wouldn't have run on that, would it have?
No. In fact, the
and so was dismissal with prejudice the proper remedy on that cause of action?
I believe it was, Your Honor. In this particular case, again, he was alerted to the fact.
But I'm saying at the time summary judgment was entered, he could still file a new suit against the trustee.
That's correct. But they maintained throughout this case, however, that they were suing the right party. And that kind of moved directly on to the second argument that we made, which was also made to the trial court, was the fact that they had no damages.
But that wasn't part of your summary judgment motion, was it?
Oh, yes, it was.
Did you raise the issue of damages in your summary judgment
Absolutely.
Motion, or was it simply the proper party argument?
Well, I can't itemize every argument that I was making at the time, but proper party was one of them. Mm-hmm. And the appellants in their brief also said the trial court dismissed the case because there was no proof of that, no evidence of damages.
Well, that's what the court said.
Correct.
But I'm wondering if that was properly before the court at the summary judgment hearing, because the way I read the motion, it only went to the issue of proper party, and there was no discovery at that point done on damages.
Well, I think there was an assertion, and it was certainly made in their brief. And that
The appellate brief or the
yes,
brief?
In the appellant's brief.
Okay, but I'm talking about at the summary judgment
right.
proceeding.
Well, we cast it as an entire motion for summary judgment of the entire case, and we did make the argument in the lower court that there's no proof of damages. And they didn't tender any damages either. What they tried to do was make hay with the fact that, well, we think he may have had knowledge. They were focused so much on the first cause of action that they ignored the second, this breach of contract act. And our contention was, wait a minute, you've got the wrong party. There's no nexus or proximate causation. And then there are no damages. So that was always in front of the court at that level. And it was part of the motion. It was part of the evidence that we offered, too. We just had, there was never any showing.
What evidence did you offer in connection with damages?
The fact that there was no diminution in the value of the property and the fact that there were no repairs. That's their burden. We alerted the court to that fact, and I believe the court accepted it. There were a couple of affidavits in that I thought were important, and one of which was that of Michael Piricello. And he simply said he had no knowledge in the first instance, as trustee. Mm-hmm. He had no knowledge in the first instance, but also there was no showing of any damages.
That wasn't in his affidavit, though, was it?
That's my recollection that it was, Your Honor. That was certainly part of our argument. The burden was on them to come forward with some proof that there were damages, and nothing came forward.
Counsel, the only party that was before the court, as far as the defendant was concerned, was the individual, not the trustee.
Correct, Your Honor.
So if the trust, and I understand it's the same person.
It is.
But from a legal standpoint, those are two different entities.
Correct.
So if you have a judgment that goes against the individual, how can it apply against the trustee?
Well, the problem with...
When the trustee has not been made a party.
That's correct. The trustee was not involved in that action. And could they bring one? I suppose. But right now, the summary judgment stands against the appellee. My client, Michael Piricello, there's been no attempt to bring any type of action. Him as trustee of the revocable trust.
So technically, the first cause of action, the time is gone. So if we buy in with all of this, that's don't have to worry about it. The second one, it would be with prejudice as far as your client individually, but would not affect any action against him as trustee.
I think then the argument could be made if a subsequent case was brought, Your Honor. This was an issue preclusion. This was an issue that was raised. But again, I'm not going to put the cart in front of the horse on that. There was simply no attempt made to join him as the trustee of the trust, even though it was out there. That information was there.
And that again raises my concern that if there was not the necessary party, because the testimony was he signed that as the trustee, even though it doesn't say trustee. And the court didn't have jurisdiction over the necessary parties. How could the court really dispose of the issue at all? And isn't it actually dismissed for lack of jurisdiction?
Well, because they raised the issue, he was acting individually. I think it does, and our contention was he was acting as trustee. I think the trial court made that distinction when it made its ruling. Now, it may not be as overt in that, but by the same token, I think the trial court looked at this and said, you know, there's a problem with this case. You're contending that he's acting individually. Where's the evidence? Where's the substance? And that's what the trial court ruled on, that there was simply no evidence. Could they have brought them in? Yes, they could have brought them in at any time. Failed to do so. In addition, Your Honors, I just want to point out briefly, there was what I would call a cascade of errors that occurred with both the first and the second causes. You get to the point where, when you're involved in these cases, you're looking for the first cause of action or first claim, for example, the actual damages. There simply were no actual damages. I saw a reference at one point that this was a house that was worth $90,000 and that was their damages. Well, this wasn't a rescission action. This was a damages act. In addition, I look at that under the second cause of action dealing with the damages. Once again, no repairs, no evidence of any type of special damages, even though some were actually pled. No evidence of them whatsoever. No evidence of general damages. There's a, quote, inference in their brief that they had damages because there would be debris and water in their yard. Well, Welcome to the world of homeownership, Judge. That's what we're judges. That's what we get. You own a home, debris gets in your yard, water accumulates in your yard. No other evidence was ever offered besides that. So, Your Honors, I don't want to be a dead horse senseless, but I think what was involved in this case, and what I'm confident was involved in this case, was they sued the wrong person, for openers. But more importantly, there are just no damages. There were no damages shown to these plaintiffs. So with that, Your Honors, I'd ask the court to affirm the actions of the district court.
Thank you. Thank you. The matter is submitted. The next case is Chemnitz versus Tolkien.